A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Brinda Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Krishna Book Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Janmashtami Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey.
Krishna, 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 hey.
Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Krishna, 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 Pahimam.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam. So, continuing our reading from Krishna Book, Chapter 2. So, we've gotten up to the point previously where Krishna has entered the womb of Devaki. So she's appearing very beautiful. So Kamsa, however, saw the transcendental beauty of his sister Devaki, and he at once concluded that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken shelter in her womb. She had never before looked so wonderfully beautiful. He could distinctly understand that there was something wonderful within the womb of Devaki. In this way, Kamsa became perturbed because he was sure that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would kill him in the future, had now come. Kamsa began to think, what is to be done with Devaki? Surely she has Vishnu or Krishna within her womb, so it is certain that Krishna has come to execute the mission of the demigods. And even if I immediately kill Devaki, his mission cannot be frustrated. Kamsa knew very well that no one can frustrate the purpose of Vishnu. Any intelligent man can understand that the law of God cannot be violated. His purpose will be served in spite of all impediments offered by the demons. Kamsa thought, if I kill Devaki at the present moment, Vishnu will enforce his supreme will more vehemently. To kill Devaki just now would be a most abominable act. No one desires to kill his reputation, even in an awkward situation. If I kill Devaki now, my reputation will be spoiled. Devaki is a woman, and thus she is under my shelter. She is pregnant, and if I kill her, immediately my reputation, the results of my pious activities, and my duration of life will all be finished. He further deliberated, a person who is too cruel is as good as dead, even in this lifetime. No one likes a cruel person during his lifetime, and after his death, people curse him. On account of his self-identification with the body, he must be degraded and pushed into the darkest regions of hell. Kamsa thus meditated on all the pros and cons of killing Devaki, being merged in the ocean of animosity with the personality of Godhead. He began to think of Krishna or Vishnu while sitting, while sleeping, while walking, while eating, while working, in all the situations of his life. His mind became so much absorbed with the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that indirectly he could see only Krishna or Vishnu around him. Unfortunately, although his mind was so absorbed in the thought of Vishnu, he was not recognized as a devotee because he was thinking of Krishna as an enemy. The state of mind of a great devotee is also to be always absorbed in Krishna, but a devotee thinks of him favorably, not unfavorably. To think of Krishna favorably is Krishna consciousness, but to think of Krishna unfavorably is not Krishna consciousness. So, you know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, always think of me. You know, manmana, always think of me, always keep your mind focused on me. But then he says, bhava mad bhakta, but be a devotee, be in a devotional mood, favorable to me. So Kamsa had the first part, manmana. He was thinking of Krishna all the time, but he didn't have the second part. Bhava Mad Bhakto, be my devotee. He was thinking of Krishna as an enemy. Of course, he'll eventually get some benefit from that, from the thinking of Krishna part, and Krishna will take care of his demoniac attitude towards him. Later. At this time, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada and followed by many other demigods, invisibly appeared in the house of Kamsa. They began to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in select verses, which are very pleasing to the devotees and which award fulfillment of their desires. The first words they spoke acclaim that the Lord is true to his vow. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna descends to this material world just to protect the pious and destroy the impious. That is his vow. The demigods could understand that the Lord had taken his residence within the womb of Devaki to fulfill his vow, and they were very glad that the Lord was appearing in order to fulfill his his mission. Thus the demigods address the Lord as Satyam Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the Absolute Truth. Krishna is the Absolute Truth because, unlike relative truth, he is truth in all the three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time. In the course of past, present, and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the Supreme Truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence within the material world, the cause of that opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there is any strength within the material world, the cause of such strength is Krishna. If there's any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kalosmi Lokachaya Krit. I am time. And this time factor in the material world is destroying everything. You know, something that is material, its existence is only temporary. If we may have these bodies right now, and they seem to the materialist like an absolute truth, but they're only temporary. Anything material is only temporary. It comes into existence, it's maintained for some time, and then it dwindles and is finally destroyed. And that includes the very universe itself. At some point in time, it doesn't exist. It comes into existence. It's maintained for some time. And then, finally, it's destroyed. So even the universe itself is like that. But Krishna exists before everything. While it's here, he maintains it. And then, eventually, he destroys it. That's true of every material thing. So, that means every material thing, whatever it is, it's a truth, but it's a relative truth, temporary. But Krishna is the absolute truth. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. From me, everything is coming. So, continuing. This material world is composed of five principal elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And all such elements are emanations from Krishna. The material scientists accept these five primary elements as the cause of the material manifestation. But the elements in their gross and subtle states are produced by Krishna. The living entities who are working within this material world are the products of his marginal potency. In the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that the whole manifestation is a combination of two kinds of energies of Krishna, the superior energy and the inferior energy. The living entities are the superior energy, and the dead material elements are his inferior energy. In its dormant stage, everything remains in Krishna. So, the attempts of the material scientists to understand this world, to understand the origin of the universe, the origin and development of the life forms within it, how everything is going on, they will never have a perfect understanding of these things because they are only looking at one part of what the phenomenon actually is. They are simply looking at the gross physical elements. They are missing even the subtle material elements like mind, intelligence, and ego. According to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, those are part of his material energy. But the material scientists are missing that. And beyond that, they are missing the soul. You know, Krishna explains that a living thing is a combination of two things. Yes, the material elements, the gross and subtle material elements, but there's also the soul, which is providing consciousness. To this very day, the material scientists are unable to explain the origin of consciousness. They're trying like anything to figure out a way in which they can get consciousness from chemicals. But they'll never be successful in doing that. So they're missing that. And therefore, their explanations will never be completely satisfied. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. The living entity, the soul, is part and parcel of me. Jivara sarupahoi krishnara nityadas. And the nature of that conscious self, that eternal conscious self, is to be the eternal servant of Krishna. And sometimes some souls, they forget that. And therefore, Krishna has manifested this material universe for such forgetful conditioned souls, to give them the opportunity to try to enjoy themselves apart from him, or to come back to him. And sometimes Krishna even comes himself to encourage the fallen conditioned souls to remember him and come back to him. And that is the meaning of Janmashtami, you know, Krishna's appearance in this world. The demigods continue to offer their respectful prayers unto the supreme form of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, by analytical study of the material manifestation. What is this material manifestation? It is like a tree. A tree stands on the ground. Similarly, the tree of the material manifestation is standing on the ground of material nature. This material manifestation is compared to a tree because a tree is ultimately cut off in the due course of time. A tree is called vriksha. Vriksha means that thing which will be ultimately cut off. Therefore, the tree of the material manifestation cannot be accepted as the ultimate truth because it is influenced by time. But Krishna's body is eternal. He existed before the material manifestation. He is existing while the material manifestation is continuing. And when it will be dissolved, he will continue to exist. Therefore, only Krishna can be accepted as the absolute truth. Of course, even the material scientists, you know, they have the idea that the universe is temporary, that it comes into existence in some, what they call Big Bang, you know, that it comes out of something. You know, so they think, even the material scientists, they think that before this universe existed, there was something. But what that something is, they don't really know. You know, sometimes they speak of some quantum mechanical vacuum, some impersonal material sea of energy from which this universe comes. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Vedic literature, we're being given information about what or who is really there before this universe begins. And that person who exists eternally, before material time, before material space, before the material universe, is eternal, conscious, full of ever-expanding pleasure. And each of us are also eternal. We're eternally related as the fragmental parts and parcels of that eternal personality of Godhead, full of knowledge, full of bliss. And that explains why in our universe there are conscious individuals. The material scientists, they cannot explain the origin of consciousness. But our absolute truth, our vision of what was there before this universe explains it. Because it's consciousness, it's conscious, personal, individual. But there's the supreme conscious, personal, individual, Krishna. And then there are these subordinate particles, parts and parcels of that supreme, conscious, individual person. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo vididati kaman. Yes, there are many eternal conscious beings, the Upanishads say. But among them, one is supreme. Because otherwise, we would be the supreme controllers. We could make universes and control everything and control our destiny. But no. Yes, we're conscious. We're individual. We're persons. But we have to recognize that there is a supreme individual conscious, personal being to whom we are subordinate. And if we understand that, then we can achieve the perfection of life. If we don't understand that, we'll mistake ourselves for the supreme, conscious, individual, personal being. But then we have to ask ourselves, then why are we subjected to birth, death, old age, disease? Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anadarshanam. So we're in the we're now the conditioned souls who have forgotten their eternal identity as servants of Krishna. They're caught within the tree of this material energy which the demigods are describing. The Katha Upanishad also cites this example of the tree of the material manifestation standing on the ground of material nature. This tree has two kinds of fruits, distress and happiness. Those who are living in the tree of the body are just like two birds. One bird is the localized aspect of Krishna, known as the Paramatma, and the other bird is the living entity. The living entity is eating the fruits of this material manifestation. Sometimes he eats the fruit of happiness, and sometimes he eats the fruit of distress. But the other bird is not interested in eating the fruit of the fruit of distress or happiness, because he is self-satisfied. The Katha Upanishad states that one bird on the tree of the body is eating the fruits, and the other bird is simply witnessing. The roots of this tree extend to the three directions. This means that the root of this tree is the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Just as the tree's root expands, so by association of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, one expands his duration of material existence. The taste of the fruits are of four kinds: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately liberation. According to the different associations and the three modes of material nature, the living entities are tasting different kinds of religiosity, different kinds of economic development, different kinds of sense gratification, and different kinds of liberation. Practically, all material work is performed in ignorance, but because there are three qualities, sometimes the quality of ignorance is covered with goodness or passion. The taste of these material fruits is accepted through the senses, through five senses. The five sense organs through which knowledge is acquired are subjected to six kinds of whips: lamentation, illusion, infirmity, death, hunger, and thirst. This material body, or the material manifestation, is covered by seven layers: skin, muscle, blood, marrow, bone, fat, and semen. The branches of the tree are eight: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. There are nine gates in this body: the two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, one genital, one rectum. And there are 10 kinds of internal air passing within the body: prana, apana, udana, vyana, samana, etc. The two birds seated in this tree, as explained above, are the living entity and the localized personality of Godhead, Paramatma. The root cause of the material manifestation described here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself to take charge of the three qualities of the material world. Vishnu takes charge of the mode of goodness. Brahma takes charge of the mode of passion. And Lord Shiva takes charge of the mode of ignorance. Brahma, by the mode of passion, creates this manifestation. Lord Vishnu maintains this manifestation by the mode of goodness. And Lord Shiva annihilates it by the mode of ignorance. The whole creation ultimately rests in the Supreme Lord. He is the cause of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And when the whole manifestation is dissolved, its subtle form, as his energy, it rests within his body. At present, the demigods prayed, the Supreme Lord is appearing just for the maintenance of this manifestation. Actually, the supreme cause is one, but less intelligent persons, being deluded by the three modes of material nature, see that the material world is manifested through different causes. Those who are intelligent can see that the cause is one, Krishna. As it is stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of all causes. Brahma is the deputed agent for the creation. Vishnu is the expansion of Krishna for maintenance. And Lord Shiva is the expansion of Krishna for dissolution. Our dear Lord, the demigods prayed, it is very difficult to understand your eternal form or personality. People in general are unable to understand your actual form. Therefore, you are personally descending to exhibit your original eternal form. Somehow people can understand the different incarnations of your lordship, but they are puzzled to understand the eternal form of Krishna with two hands moving among human beings exactly like one of them. This eternal form of your lordship gives ever-increasing transcendental pleasure to the devotees, but for the non-devotees, this form is very dangerous. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very pleasing to the sadhus, parchanayu sadhunam, but this form is very dangerous for the demons because Krishna also descends to kill the demons. He is therefore simultaneously pleasing to the devotees and dangerous to the demons. Our dear lotus-eyed Lord, you are the source of pure goodness. There are many sages who simply by samadhi or transcendentally meditating upon your lotus feet and thus being absorbed in your thought have easily transformed the great ocean of nescience caused by the material nature into no more than the water in a calf's hoofprint. The purpose of meditation is to focus the mind upon the personality of Godhead, beginning from his lotus feet. Simply by meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord, great sages cross over this vast ocean of material existence without difficulty. So I think this would be a good place to end this reading, because the demigods are here describing what we're going to be celebrating on Janmashtami, the appearance of the original form of the personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Because there's so many incarnations of Krishna, they're described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so many different appearances of that supreme personality of Godhead. But it said, Krishna's too Bhagavan Swayam. There may be many different appearances of the supreme personality of Godhead, but the source of them all, the original personality of Godhead, is Krishna in his two-armed form, playing the flute, causing ever-increasing pleasure to his devotees. So the demigods are here saying, yes, we should always meditate on the lotus feet of that supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Krishna Janmashtami ki jai, Gaur Premananda.